It is a great pleasure to welcome to European Investing Summit 2022 returning MOI Global instructor Sébastien Lemonnier, fund manager at InnoCap Gestion. Sébastien started his career in 2003 as a financial analyst at Tocqueville Finance. He was promoted there to European Fund Manager in 2006, running the UCITS fund Tocqueville Value Europe. After that, he pursued his career for Mansartis, a Paris-based multifamily office, after 2012. He joined InnoCap in 2017, managing the UCITS fund Quadrige Europe Midcaps that has been outperforming peers by a wide margin on a multi-year basis. Sébastien holds a master's degree in financial management and is married with a daughter. He also is an avid tennis player and practices English boxing. So, Sébastien, great to have you with us again in this forum. I look forward to your presentation. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, John. Once again, a big pleasure for me to be part of such great event with a lot of great speaker that I would be happy to listen. So happy to do another presentation. As mentioned, in fact, so far you bring me a bit of luck when I explain some of my example. So I wish, despite the current environment, that's going to keep working. So just to start, like a disclaimer, if there is two things to remember, past performance is no indication of future performance. And any investment conviction mentioned is no recommendation of buying. It's just example of our investment approach. So just briefly, for those especially who don't know me, so I'm working at InnoCap Gestion, that is a French entrepreneurial boutique, around 700 million assets under management. We are small. We do long-only investment, mostly into small and mid-cap into Europe, which is my specialty. I will briefly explain the process, which, as mentioned, is quite simple, and I think especially in complex environment, back to basic is probably key to success. So what we look at, and probably like many other investors, so there is no big differentiating factor there, but we look for leading company into niche application, company that are able basically to bring value added and intelligence in the interest of them client, which explain them why they grow their market share, why they grow organically, and why they're able to generate strong free cash flow and above in the average in terms of return on capital employed, which are probably the two main critical factor for us when we talk about operational excellence. As a lot of investor, quality investor, we look at edge, barriers to entry. But the most important for me is to identify a differentiating factor that will then explain the profit growth and the value creation. And lastly, we lack a lot fundamental family-owned or entrepreneurial ownership. If there is something that I hate, is stock option, especially for top management. My client have a downside risk. So I lack when the family or the main owner is buying his own share, basically. And if there is stock option, it has to be only for the employee out of the top management. So this is basically the culture. InnoCap Gestion is a small entrepreneurial group. We don't have like a massive tool like some other investor. We don't think to be like more smart than any other. So our approach basically, and this is a good transition to the differentiating factor, is probably to do less, but to try to do better. And in that sense, we spend a lot of time on the ground. I do myself around 450 on average company meetings every year. So after 20 years of experience, it starts to be quite a lot. But probably that differentiates us. We spend a lot of time in following our key conviction, our top holding within the fund. The fund is quite concentrated around like 30, 35 holding, no more than this. And if I take example of a Belgium company that I think I mentioned twice during those investing seminar in the past, Barco. It's a company that for the first time we've been buying, I think it was September 2018. a company that I've been following for 20 years without investing. It's still one of our holdings. And since September 2018, I made 94 contact with the company, of which 6 site visits. And for us, it's very key because this on-the-ground approach help us to step back from market noise, try to extract some of the fundamentals that are maybe not as well perceived at the company, at the consensus level. And we try also, like when I buy a stock, I always try to think why and when I will sell the stock, for which reason, and why maybe I will buy some more. And this is a good transition for understanding what Mr. Market say. I spend a lot of time reading other investor who doesn't think the same as myself. I like to read sell side, especially when they're not in line with my conviction. And probably like in sport, and you were mentioning that I'm doing boxing and I'm just out of boxing like 30 minutes ago. It's always good to learn from your enemy. And the more you learn from him, the more you know about his weakness and the better you try to be. So this is, I think, interesting parallel from the sport where I'm coming from. And I know I'm using this a lot. I probably spend like one day per month to look at the report of my competitors, to understand the positioning, to understand what Mr. Market say, basically. I'm not just reading the financial magazine. And then I try to build with my underground approach a strong conviction and sometimes divergent conviction, where is probably the most value added to extract going forward. And lastly, probably after 20 years of experience, starting my career as a pure deep value investor, then moving into more like growth, quality at reasonable price, I've been learning over the years, and probably to me, there is two aspects that I'm looking at. I like growth company, meaning when it's cheap for good reason, I try to offset this, but I'm not a fan of growth in the long term. I'm trying to catch a growth acceleration. And this is probably where we are a bit different. We have a long-term vision in every of our investment, but we don't necessarily do a buy and hold strategy. We're quite active. So if I consider fundamentally it's attractive in terms of valuation, but there is no momentum, basically, or Mr. Market doesn't want it, there is no point for me to build a strong position. So meaning it will be probably between 1% and 3% of the fund. But when I consider there is a full alignment of all the stars, basically, valuation, fundamental, growth acceleration, misunderstanding from the market, but potentially a momentum that will turn maybe with a catalyst identified, then I can go up to 6, 7, 8% of the fund. And this is where probably we're quite active. This is lesson learned. And it's only work from experience when you spend a lot of time meeting the company, visiting the company, talking to CEO, CFO, but also to the key employees within the company. Quickly on the performance, because this is the past, and we just wanted to show that sometimes it's like in sports, sometimes you're the best player, but very often the season after you could be under trouble. Our goal is to be good and stronger a bit every time. And I think the recent track record, especially after those 3 crazy years since COVID start, basically, showed probably that there is no complacency within our process. And it's probably, I think, stock market or being like an investor on the stock market used to be a marathon. I think now it's more and more a sprint, but you still have to run as long as a marathon. And I think this is where probably you have to adapt. And this is moving to my lesson learned. This is something that I keep using. I know I used already this slide last year because this is something that is on the top of my desk and I'm trying to every day remember it. Because there is always a good reason to forget one of the rules that you've been experiencing in the past. For me, the most important is probably humility and rigorous work, basically. You can be weak sometimes, but the most important is for Walt and to understand why in the past you've been maybe weak. Again, as mentioned, I think to try to be too smart is not working. And this is where I prefer to focus on less companies within my universe, but trying to better understand them and follow them probably much more close than some other. Another aspect is no complacency. I think this is probably the main enemy of any investor. It's good when a stock is up, but this is past once again. And the most important is tomorrow. And on the other hand, stock could be down, but you could also clearly be wrong. And it's not because you built a conviction. If you get wrong, you also have to understand this. And in that sense, for me, it's like when you are on the stock market, you have to be absolutely cool in your approach. And this is what I used to say. I'm only in love with my wife and my daughter, but never with any company or never with any management, even if I have like with Marco 94 contact with them. When there is no reason to own the stock, you have to be cool and you have to be out of the stock. When you are absolutely rigorous in your approach, and like a sports guy who is training hard, and making his skills strong, then it's time to go for the show. Fundamental conviction is key, but timing is important, as mentioned. And this is also what I try to get, is never blame anybody from your mistake, but learn from yourself. Because when you're a manager, it's you to press the button, and you have to accept the positive and the negative. Where I would like to focus this year, because I think last year I did another topic. This year, which is once again a very complex year, and probably nobody knows what's going on. Nobody knew about this war. There is inflation, but the inflation is like above all expectation. Nobody knows about what recession we're going to go. There is still the same for manager who loves the growth quality stock that are still expensive. There is still the value investor who may look like at the, everything that is cheap, but there is also kind of recession. Once again, I'm not smarter than anybody else. And I think when the environment is so tough and very difficult to predict, a very simple and common sense approach is probably key. And that reminds me what we did after COVID. I remember we had a good 2019 year performance, especially at the end of the year, but we were clearly not ready for what happened with the COVID. We have to adapt, and this is probably within my different rules. One of the quality that we've been building over time is to be adapt, to step back from the market noise, and to try to build conviction that are good whatever happened, basically. This is very difficult. That's probably why I'm more comfortable to have a 30-35 holding within my phone instead of 80 around, because I know that I control probably better. And the first thing is to offset any mistake. I think if you out of mistake, or if you reduce as much as possible the number of mistakes, there is probably a good part of the job that has been doing, that has been made, basically. So let's go on what it means, focus on the common sense approach. So just because I like to do follow-up, even if I mention that I'm active in the way I manage the fund, I like to do the kind of after sales for those who follow basically some of our ideas. So Barco, it's a company that I hesitate to present this year for the third time. But again, I don't want any complacency. We still own the stock. We still like it. We still find it attractive in terms of growth, in terms of valuation and several options. Dermapharm is a stock that that we've been buying. We still have it. We presented it in the past. It was successful. Then COVID appeared and it started to be a love stock by too many people, probably because they have a COVID franchise doing some of the vaccine for BioNTech. So it was too many people. We sold it around 90 euro. We went back to the stock the last month, a bit too early. But this is a conviction that we are building. I was with the company last year. It's probably still some work to be done. But probably the valuation is not is probably too black today. And especially after the recent Arco Pharma acquisition that just made in France, that from my understanding is the acquisition they always wanted to do since the IPO. I think we should see some positive prospect in terms of sales synergies going forward. But maybe if I'm here next year, maybe that would be the 23 investment example. So what about 2022? And this time I decided not to do one example, but to focus on this common sense approach and different try to elaborate with you different ideas. So beginning of the year, we were very convinced that the inflation, whatever people were telling us, whatever central banks were saying, was not low, was not transition, but was going to be important and was going to be structural. And this is again coming from all the discussion we had by 2021 and this like on the ground approach. One of the examples I always use was the FILA, F-A-I-L-A, an Italian company. They're doing basically the pencil for the kids. We're going from the nursery at 2 years old till like 6 years old. So this is a kind of business that you need. And even in them business, last year, they were able to increase by 6-8% the price to Walmart, gaining market share in the US. And so for me, for that kind of small ticket item that there is no substitution, when you are a leading player able to pass on price increase to Walmart, gaining market share, to me was more relevant about inflation than what the central banks in the world were saying. And from this, we've been quite committed, quite strict also in terms of valuation. Unfortunately, the war started and it was quite tough. And also given the fact that my wife is Ukrainian born, but again, I try to be not too emotional. So we've been suffering because we moved from a world before war, which was probably some manageable inflation, which was probably great for a lot of men that all of us as kind of value background used to like. A lot of industrial company that probably suffer for 10 years of deflation and for the first time in 10 years were able to pass on price increase. Unfortunately, with the war, a lot of things have changed and what I call like an uncontrolled inflation, which lead a lot of uncertainty, and I'm not making the development, but we all know what's going on and what the newspaper are saying about. So once again, we try to spend a lot of time the first 2-3 weeks after the war and after the shock, trying to step back from the inflation topic, trying to step back from the complacency of owning a stock that is quality, whatever the valuation, trying to offset also the topic of easing supply chain, which probably gonna be good in terms of business turnaround, but also at a time where every order backlog are historical high and probably not sustainable. And also I take the example of several industries that used to have like 2-3 weeks business visibility, and suddenly they start to have like 6 months business visibility. Again, there is no complacency. There is a lot of experience from 2007. I don't say that the situation is as bad, but I think it's also good to be humble. And we don't know about tomorrow. So I still need to do a portfolio and I still have conviction. And especially when the stock market is going down, I think there is clearly more opportunities today than it was like 1 year, 1 year and a half ago. And when we step back, we try to think about two topics. First one is what I call European sovereignty requirement. So I know a lot of investors start to talk about this, and that's why most of the defense name basically have been rebound. But we try to step back and to see this kind of thematic more large. Why? Because basically, in a world which is getting more complex, if you have some area where there is a need of investment, there are probably some company that can benefit from it. Meaning, whatever recession or not, there will be more sustainability in the top line growth. There might be, in some cases, even some margin increase from operating leverage, from higher value added solution. And this is what we try to find. I'm gonna develop afterward on the Rheinmetall. But I take another example, which was probably much less obvious when we start to talk about this topic. Imerys, I think, is a good example. It's an industrial company. But what we had in mind when we start to look at Imerys by April was the vertical integration model. And this is not just an industrial company. This is probably where our early perception was different from the one of the market, is when you have integrated model, those guys, they own some mine in the world. And they have different mine. And that's where we thought at that time that maybe some of the mine could be, especially when we have some raw material issue, not only in terms of price, but in terms of availability, this could prove as a differentiating factor, both in terms of opportunity, probably in terms of pricing, and lastly, in terms of valuation. Without this event, I think Imerys would have probably stayed cheap for good reason, lack of growth, even though there is pricing power. And nobody over the last 20 years wanted to evaluate the value of the mine of this company that I think I present like maybe 10 years ago in the value investing seminar. Today, in fact, they've been selling since we start our position. They are in the process to sell two businesses. And it looks like there will be capital market there early November. And they will talk about the mine that they discover, which is seems to be full of lithium. There's not much officially to be said, but some analysts or some press report mentioned that it could be like the biggest mine in France or in Europe. And that could prove the kind of strategic value of such business model. So that was basically the logic. And then you can follow the other name that I mentioned. Another topic that we found of interest, and I will focus on Verallia, but I've probably got almost 50% of the phone today. Probably 50% of the phone is what I call European sovereignty requirement. And the other 50% is what I call defensive quality name, but overlooked. As I said, we like to focus on what Mr. Market wants, but we also want to be disciplined. Today, most of investors, and it's probably a bit too extreme, are positioned on defensive name, quality name. But then they offset the valuation. Our approach is to try to understand and to identify some of the stock that fit those criteria, because they are small ticket item, because this is kind of CapEx or OPEX that are very difficult to cut. But for any reason, there is a misunderstanding and the valuation is clearly too cheap. And those companies, like the example of Verallia, is probably trading like a cyclical name, whereas it's a pure quality and defensive business by nature to our point of view. And this is probably where we are by part protected in terms of margin of safety. I think to buy a quality stock is not enough. Then you offset the valuation. And when you invest on the stock market, you need some margin of safety, which is proved by the valuation. But at the same time, we also have some catalysts, because all those four names are, I think, quite interesting in terms of top line growth, resilience, margin, and excess cash, and especially the excess free cash flow generated by the business. So let's focus the first one on Rheinmetall. I think most of you know this name. This is an old company generating a bit less than 6 billion sales by 2021, a bit more than 24,000 company employees. There is two business, basically the defense business, which is around like 70-75% of sales as of today, and the rest is the auto business, where I will focus much less because it's less than 10% of the group profit, and basically I take it as a free option if any turnaround. But it's also important to understand that this company was much more balanced in terms of activities in the past. First, because it was no growth in the defense industry for a decade, but also because at that time, business in auto was better, even if it was kind of commodity. But the good thing is this company have been under restructuring within the auto sector basically for years, which bring a lot of excellence in the culture of the group, in the commitment of the top management, which is not kind of state-owned companies as of now. That's why it's like 100% free float for billion market cap. And I think there is some good lesson learned from the top management, from what they've been doing in a tough environment, which is auto, and especially when two-thirds is like piston-related and no value added, where basically you can bring some operating excellence in the defense business, where there is growth, where there is spare capacity, and where there is urgent need to deliver the client. So this is a company that is net cash, which is also something that we structurally like, and we like it probably even more, as we're going to see after, because we think it's a bit overlooked in terms of free cash flow generation. The order backlog is strong, but should further accelerate. So why we like it? When we step back, we understand we are in a new paradigm. We need, and this is a debate, and they open about this, and I'm trying once again not to be emotional because my wife is Ukrainian born, but I know the defense industry have been a low growth industry for years. Most of the state didn't spend any money for years. And a good example is Germany, as we all know now, and we probably forgot before. A lot of investors also didn't want or were not allowed to invest into those companies due to the ESG perception. But I will be quite straight on this topic. For me, if there is growth, attractive valuation, sound fundamental, there is no topic not to invest into this one, and especially on an ESG angle, because I have a daughter. What the plan basically to try to pollute less if we're not even able basically to protect our ground. So I know it's a bit personal position, but this is also probably why there is this overlook valuation, which might evolve going forward. So why we like? I know there is a lot of skepticism about government and commitment of the government in the past. Even when they sign and when they decide to invest in something, there could be some delays. We have this in mind, but we also understand there is a new paradigm. Why? Because the budget that we all see in the special like 100 billion fund that Germany wants to spend, and the fact that they want finally to be in line with NATO and spend 2% of the GDP minimum going forward, is not just like due to one party, is the full commitment and responsibility of Germany and all the citizens. And this change has been even written in the constitution. And you don't change the constitution every week. Another aspect, and when I've been doing a lot of work, there is a big topic in Germany today, there is nothing. And when Germany claim in a newspaper that they want to be the first army in Europe, they have a lot to invest. Why? Today, there is probably 3-4 days of war in terms of ammunition inventory, whereas the average or the requirement being part of NATO is 35 days of war. And the gap is huge because you will need probably at one shift today with Rheinmetall, you will need probably 10 years of investment. So this is what I'm talking about, growth. Rheinmetall has been a company that has been growing on average the last 10 years, more or less in line with GDP, plus 2%. And I can understand why it was cheap. Like you grow in line with GDP, you're cyclical, you have an auto business, which is like almost half of the sales and with like a kind of ongoing restructuring since 3 to 5 years, there was good reason to be a cheap stock. But for the next 3 years, and I think we can even extrapolate to the next 5 years, there would be double-digit top line. And I'm putting the number that are today in line with consensus expectation, which is mostly based on German spending, and which is not including some of the tenders that are going forward, of which the one that we're waiting from Australia, that include around like 300, 400 tanks. And this is going to be like a big order. They're in competition. We don't know yet if they're going to win or not. But this is, even if it's part of the order backlog guidance, this is not yet into the consensus number. So this is kind of cherry on the cake. Same as, for example, the tender for, I think, 1 billion around with Italy next year, where they also want to compete. But basically, this is a company that has been low growth, under restructuring, moving to high growth, but also high growth with good margin through operating leverage, mix improvement, and so excellent free cash flow. The business today in the defense is running one single shift. There is opportunities to move, and they start to move to two, especially for some of the ammunition business. Ammunition business being almost like a bit less than one third of sales in the defense industry, but this is the highest margin business. When you have like a 10-11% EBITDA for the rest of the business in the defense, you have ammunition, which is probably closer to like 15-20%. So there is a possibility that this company growing more than 10% top line will also benefit from margin mix, meaning higher leverage and more contribution from the highest margin business, which is ammunition. And this is why we think that the margin of the company and the return on capital employed should be higher, also considering that there is a shift in the paradigm of Germany, not in terms of spending only, but also in terms of working capital. Historically in Europe, working capital in the defense industry has always been weak. Like client, state-owned company or government taking long decision, paying at the end of the contract, meaning a lot of free cash flow burn the first 2-3 years, 4 years before to get any recovery. As opposed to the US model, which is much more share prepayment. And this is where we think, and talking with the company, we think that the government in Germany has radically changed about this topic. So they're clearly here to try to help the company to hire people, to secure material, even though they are, of course, much less impacting than any other with vertical integration and being critical player. But this is also something that clearly gonna change. And we took the opportunity of Q2 to increase our shareholding when it was some misunderstanding from the market. There is some seasonality. The working capital had been weak and so free cash flow. But that was just seasonal because of Q2. But this is something that should start to be on the radar of investor from H2. And we wish that then, with accelerating of growth and order, the statue of the stock should change. So this is why we like it. And when I took Bloomberg numbers, and you can see on the right, the square, like we are for the same valuation, more or less, EV a bit of 8x today compared to 9 historically. So even if the stock doubled basically year to date due to the war, you also see that in terms of valuation, this is still cheap. Whereas you have a growth which seems to be now structural and not just cyclical, and you have an animal who is able to generate double-digit margin with 20% return on capital employed. When I just look at those 2-3 numbers, top line above 10% on average, EBITDA margin above that double digit and return on capital employed of 20%. Basically, I will think this is a high growth quality company, but clearly not, because investors don't want to invest into the defense. There's still a lot of skepticism about the fact that the government is not going to commit to his investment. I try to be disciplined. I try to be focused on both fundamental growth story and valuation, and we like it. I was quite interesting to see, I think it was like 10 days ago, that both the CEO and CFO bought again some share for around like €300,000. And once again, I said in the beginning, we lack family owned, we lack entrepreneurial company. And I think those guys, when they buy share, they know what to do. And because they have good visibility going forward, and there is a statute change in the company, which is not yet reflected to our point of view in the valuation. Why we also like it, when you say that Germany, and when Germans say that they want to be like the number one army in Europe, I think they also need a German champion. And to me, this is one of the paradox. Rheinmetall is 100% free float company. To me, that's always been strange. I probably explained this today due to the fact that historically, the company was not a pure defense name. Having like some of the auto business, which as mentioned was under restructuring, but I can understand why the state was not so apt to be part of the boat. Nevertheless, and it's official, assets in the auto industry, in the auto business are for disposal. the company is going to try to probably process the next 1, 2, 3 years. So there will be some disposal. Given the growth and the margin contribution from the defense, anyway, there will be strong dilution of contribution out of any disposal from the auto. So I think over time, I won't be surprised if in 1, 2, 3, 5 years, Rheinmetall become 100% company into the defense business. And so I will question mark why the state is not shareholder. And I think a good parallel of this new paradigm that I mentioned is Hensoldt, another German player in the industry of the defense. They are clearly focused on the electronic business, Optotronic exactly. And those guys, they used to be part of Airbus. Then they were sold to KKR at that time. And you imagine they are like 100% market share in some of the program for Europe in the defense industry. So this is showing you how naive maybe we were in the past. But the IPO and the IPO because, and at that time, the state, German state, wanted to build a position and they bought 25.1%. And I think there is no reason why we don't see at any point any shareholding from the state, at least in Rheinmetall. And I think this could be a positive aspect because we see that now more and more tender and to win a project is also something where the best product with the best management is not always enough. You also need some political dimension. And I think to get some of the support from the German state will be a good add-on and another like a competitive advantage for Rheinmetall to further grow. Why I also think it will make sense today, Rheinmetall is like 7 billion around market cap. On our estimate, the free cash flow should be quite strong in the coming 2 to 3 years. And we estimate that without any disposal, Rheinmetall will probably be around that net cash position of 1 billion by 2025. And I think there is clearly, an issue in terms of balance sheet efficiency. So what about dividend, cash return, share buyback, or any M&A consideration? There is not a lot of things to be done in terms of M&A. That's why we're questioning and we find this kind of angle quite attractive. This is not at the core of the investment approach, but this is what I call like a free option, if anything around. So here it is. I think I try to make it as simple as I say. In fact, we try to focus on common sense approach. And to me, this one looks quite sound and quite simple to understand without even doing like complex mathematics. I think the square on the right showing the prospect of the consensus and today valuation just explain our conviction today. Let's move to overlook quality name. And there is not a lot. Even if we have some good name, it's quite difficult to find. So this is clearly not into Carl Zeiss, Meditech, Nemetschek, Sartorius, Amplifon that everybody love or already own. But we try to go a bit deeper and we try to look at companies that are resilient, that are probably benefiting from inflation and are able to generate strong free cash flow. So this is where we move to Verallia, which is a company that we know and follow since a long time, even before they got listed when I remember Saint-Gobain, because I was part of Saint-Gobain before they tried to IPO, I think 10, 15 years ago, they sold to Apollo, who then used the stock market to IPO. So this is a leading producer of glass packaging for beverage product. You probably know better Vidrala, the Spanish equivalent, which is a bit different. Verallia is much more wine exposed as opposed to Vidrala, which is much more beer exposed. There is also some difference in terms of industrial footprint, where this is true. Historically, Vidrala was probably more efficient with less factory, bigger factory, being able to be more productive and with better return on capital employed. Whereas Verallia was also like focused on the transport of the client, being close to the client with product available, which is by nature more linked to the higher fragmentation of his client and the need to be closer to the client. What I find interesting is, and we will see, we consider that today, and maybe it's not just temporary, but probably it could be structural, we think for the first time Verallia might be stronger fundamentally than Vidrala, where the valuation of Verallia is still cheaper than Vidrala and has never been as cheap as in the IPO. So again, all company, black oil company, almost 3 billion sales, 10,000 employees, market cap of almost 3 billion, a good margin, which is like above 16%. And once again, another free float 100%, and once again, another net cash company. So as I said, we'd always try, and especially if we consider this is a quality name, why stock market consider it is not? Because when I look at valuation today, trading around like 10% or above free cash flow yield, clearly it seems that the market has doubts about the quality or the cyclicality of the business. So I say, in fact, you need to understand why the people seem different compared to you. So we try to make a list, and I think there is a lot of reason why historically, it was a lot of motivation historically for investors not to like this one. First, it was a sell, an IPO was a sell by a private equity. This is a company that doesn't really need any new capital. This is high cash flow business. So this is true when you have just an IPO to benefit from the sale of a private equity. First, this is probably first not a good reason to buy it. And then it was because there was not a lot of appetite from investor. It was different placement from October 19 till March 21. And after those different placements, that leads 3 years after the stock to trade 15% below its IPO price, whereas it was no warning in general, and whereas the company delivered his business plan 1 year ahead of expectation, or one year ahead of the guidance provided during the IPO. So it was clearly a mismatch between the valuation, the price, and the investor sentiment. As mentioned again, also it was less appetite for Verallia compared to Vidrala, and especially in the previous world, due to, as I said, in fact, lower return capital employed. And cherry on the cake, unfortunately for Verallia, his CEO, who's been a quite successful guy, decided to move as a chairman from October 21, and he also sold for like 1 million share at that time, putting some more pressure on the investor sentiment. So all of this was by part out of fundamental consideration, but that clearly didn't help the sentiment of the stock. To follow on it, and this is where then we build the position of 22, was it is an energy intensive business, which is also highly exposed to gas, meaning high cost inflation and potential rationalization constraint risk for a business where I know that there's a lot of short, trying to short Vidrala, but probably more Verallia because Verallia is a bit bigger company with more free float, so it's probably easier. So this is a perfect one for those people who have this consideration. And to be also not complacent, the good argument of the hedge fund was it was cost inflation already starting by the end of last year. And the company, despite being in an oligopolistic market with strong position and a good balance between demand and offer, has been quite low and slow basically to react on price. And I remember having a meeting with the company early this year, and they were saying just simply like they had sales guy who didn't know, who never faced in them 10 years experience in price increase, cost inflation, and it was just so tough for them. The good thing is that they've been able to do it. And this is where we wait to buy the stock. That's why we bought somewhere like at the beginning of the year, after the weak Q4, due to this reason, considering there was lesson learned internally. And maybe now we're going to start to see some price increase, which could potentially surprise positively market expectation. So this is basically a kind of sum up of why people don't like it and why it's cheap. Why us, we think it's quite overlooked, and quality, most important. First, it's a defensive business. We drink, we all drink. Food and beverage, which is the end market, is something that people need. Okay, you can maybe drink a bit less wine, but being French, I know what is drinking wine. So we can reduce the consumption, but clearly this is not something as cyclical as perceived. And history has also proved that it's kind of waterproof. It's a small ticket item and it's quite resilient. Second, and this is also something we learned from the COVID, when all the factory was like full lockdown, serving the food and beverage industry give Verallia a kind of critical supplier position. So that's why this is something which is not yet official, but that's why they almost convince that if any rationalization constraint kind of gas, they will be part of the industry that are considered as critical because this is linked to food and beverage. And to me, this is something important because this is clearly something where the market has a divergent opinion. To add on this, and this is also something interesting, one of the reasons why Verallia was probably not as efficient in terms of return on capital employed than Vidrala historically, as I say, is like more plant, probably older. But the things are changing because when you have an old plant today, you can use two technologies, the new technology, which is gas related, or the old technology, which was fuel related. And this is one of the advantages that seems Verallia got today compared to Vidrala. If anything, or if to high price, to try to keep price leadership, today Vidrala will have to continue to produce with gas due to technical constraint, as opposed to Verallia, who is able today to shift 20% of the use of gas into fuel. The only difference is not just the bills, there is pollution that is changing, but it's what they say. For now, it's acceptable for everybody. And technically, there is no extra cost. And technically, once again, which I think is kind of margin of safety for them, if any rationalization tougher than fear, they can go up to 60% of the gas substitution into fuel. So I think this is something where we have a different opinion than the market. And I think this is proving that the company is more flexible than perceived by investors. Third, why we lack in terms of quality, it's an oligopolistic industry. You need to be close on the client, especially when you deal with the wine. Glass is a heavy product by nature, so the transport cost is expensive. And we have basically in Europe four players that are doing almost like a combined 70% market share, with some smaller player for the 30, which most of the time are family owned, quite disciplined, net cash, and they don't like to burn free cash. So they're also quite price discipline, which is something that we like, even if the industry has been slow to increase price compared to the cost inflation that has been huge. Now we see the effect because since beginning of the year, because there is no alternative, there is no choice, they have been increasing the price by around like 25-30%. And there is no possibility to do different except to close a factory, which maybe some of the small players have been doing for cash reason, especially when gas huge a certain point of time. But you have no choice. Another aspect, and this is where there is a differentiation for Verallia. As I said, diversified customer base, as opposed to Vidrala, who have to deal with big guys like Heineken, Carlsberg, who probably have better pricing power than Verallia, which is much more exposed to the wine vineyard. And the other advantage, which is to their advantage, is, and we will see afterward, is the fact that Verallia is hedged. By 2021, they were 85% hedged for the next 3 years in terms of energy, and they have a rolling strategy, which also prevent them from any further increase. And now, given that they have the flexibility to use some of the fuel to substitute from the gas, they can also do some break in the rolling strategy to wait and see. In general, this is a high free cash flow generative business. Once you have your capital employed, basically, this is a business that generates a lot of cash. That's why there's still within the 30% combined market share in the small player, that's why there's still a lot of small family-owned company. That's why private equity tends to like a lot that kind of business. And last, today, we have a well-balanced offer, demand balance, which in fact, moving to a short hedge, and especially after the beginning of the war, when one of the big guy, in fact, basically lost a big plant in Ukraine that was destroyed. So there's probably around 3-4% of the capacity that disappears this year. And that's why you have all the players talking, saying that they have to refuse some order. They have a strong visibility, but it's not just because there is double ordering from the client, because first, by nature, it's difficult to stock as a product. It takes a lot of space and it's expensive. So maybe some of the brewer or like the large player like Rémy Cointreau are doing, but they can't do more than 3 weeks inventory. So I think the effect is limited. But there is clearly a shortage. And today, there is no new plant announced basically for the next 2 to 3 years. So there will be a shortage of offer. And even if maybe tomorrow there is a slowdown in demand, which is possible, I think we have this shortage, which is big enough to offset any risk and which should preserve the margin of all those companies. Why we like a lot Verallia, and especially in absolute, but also in relative to the other? As mentioned, we think that with them strategy of being close to client, with them unique hedging policy, which is not the case of Vidrala, which is absolutely not the case of all the small players because it's too expensive for them and they're too small. I think Verallia has been moving from average cost efficiency, average return on capital employed, and more expensive pricing than Vidrala to today, and probably since Q2, to a position where they have a cost leadership and probably now a price leadership. As opposed to Vidrala, Verallia is able this year to preserve its margin. As opposed to Vidrala, who doesn't have a hedge, who will have need to increase the price much more than the 25-30% that I already mentioned, and they will continue to do so by H2, I don't know how much, but they will have to do it, because their margin fell down basically almost by twice. As opposed to Verallia, who is today in a position to say, the red line basically is not to attack the margin. So this is where we see the situation interesting. Verallia has been increasing the price, but after Q2 result, which was very solid once again, like was Q1, they are in a position to say we're not willing to increase the price by H2 for now, as opposed to Vidrala, who is probably going to increase by double digit. And I think for the first time ever, we will be in a situation where Verallia increase less the price than these competitors, thanks to the hedging. And so, once again, if I do worst case scenario and there is a demand slowdown tomorrow, I think we might prove in a situation where by the end of the year, it's difficult to make average because price negotiations are client by client, but it could be in a situation where Verallia might be 3% cheaper than Vidrala. And if any demand slowdown, I'm sure they're able to gain market share. Today, they can't serve those gain market share because they're running at full capacity, which also explains the very strong return on capital employed. But I think they have this overlook pricing power, but also pricing leadership, which might prove the company potentially much stronger than its competitor. And that's why I have question mark, because maybe this is something structural. Doesn't look like energy will go down anytime soon or sharply down. I think what happened now with Russia is by part structural. Unless we decide basically to pollute again the planet and to open coal and everywhere in Europe, basically, which could be possible. But I think again, then they will have this fuel possibility, which clearly reduce the energy bill. So I think there is a strong opportunity for the company. And having in mind the free cash flow generation, today, Verallia is one time net debt to EBITDA. If the company would be private, I'm sure they can go to almost 4 times net debt to EBITDA. Being stock listed, probably the maximum would be 2.5-3 times. But clearly, at 1 time, it's inefficient balance sheet. There would be more free cash flow because there is no inventory. So they're clearly very efficient and the H2 should be quite strong in terms of free cash flow. And that's why even the company is okay to consider any buyback or any M&A. And this is, I think, where there is a structural interest into the fundamentals. You have an industry which needs to modernize for CO2 emission which is not just the appetite of the client, even if sometimes there is a paradox because the client himself is asking for a bigger and more complex bottle, which is more heavy and which produce more CO2. But this is a challenge of Verallia to be able to reduce the CO2 emission like all the players in the industry. And most probably tomorrow is going to be regulation. That's why they try to invest ahead of the regulation to strengthen their competitive position. And I think that will be the challenge of the small player who are since 18 months or 2 years, just focusing on preserving free cash flow in an environment, as I said, they have no hedging, but it's quite tough for them in terms of margin decrease, whatever price increase. And I think there is a good opportunity for Verallia to benefit from this situation and to try to buy some asset and to accelerate the consolidation, which is already strong, but to become basically a cost leadership with price leadership and maybe tomorrow one of the best in terms of the CO2 emission reduction. The company is communicating a lot about it, and it's not just for making happy the ESG investor. It's also clearly because I think this is where they can accelerate them more tomorrow with this additional strength, which will be more and more relevant going forward. So this is explanation why we like, why it's still overlooked. And I think once again, 10% free cash flow yield company for a business with more than 20% ROCE and margin above like 16% in terms of EBIT, I think it's quite attractive into the environment. Here it is. I hope it was interesting, and John, happy to share any Q&A with you.
Wonderful. Sebastian, thank you so much for the terrific presentation and the two ideas. Maybe just a question on Rheinmetall. I see that the stock basically doubled beginning of March. I assume that's because of Russia's attack on Ukraine?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it changed. There was probably a lot of easy money. That's why when we bought the share, we bought after the war. We tried to be quick and efficient. I remember I made a call relatively quickly after. But it was at that time a lot of new investors buying the stock. And this is something within our analysis that we also identify. That's why we built a position which was strong fundamentally, which was strong in terms of valuation, but which was understanding Mr. Market perception, which was more weak. Because we knew that there was a lot of new investors who probably don't know very well the industry, and especially in terms of working capital, who was just buying the news. And when I talk like with several like hedge funds like the last 2 months, I know some of them when I've been using the stock weakness the last 2 months basically to make a quite big weight with my holding. I know a lot of them were saying, yeah, but what if the war stopped tomorrow? I'm sure the stock gonna be down like 20%. And this is something I kept in mind, because if they say basically this will probably happen, and that probably explain why the stock since then went down from like 220 to 180 something, I think that was this easy money part. Then it was some misunderstanding with the working capital, some postponement of order from Germany, and that's probably why we came like around 150. And with the stock market being volatile, like even a bit less, but we use this time to make this conviction, considering that there was too many skepticism on the stock, too many people thinking that if the war is over tomorrow, and I have no idea about this, even if my point of view, which is personal, it's probably not a good one. I don't think it's going to be the case, but I think even if it's the case, there is no reason for Germany to step back. And this is where our opinion is diverging. That's why I was mentioning that this is written on the Constitution. And if I take the example of the tender for Australia, for the first time in super long time, Germany, I think 2-3 weeks ago, bring some support to Rheinmetall, which never really happened in the past, probably because communication of Rheinmetall is much more entrepreneurial, not always politically correct, as opposed to what Germany is waiting for. But the fact that the German government welcome some of the minister of Australia to try to talk about this contract, which is still pending, is also like a proof and the commitment of Germany willingness to be like a strong army and then to invest. So I think even if the stock is up 100%, as mentioned, the numbers going forward are not going to be the same as was in the past. And the profile of the turnover growth is moving, the return is moving, the excess cash is moving. Probably there's not going to be automotive business in 2 to 3 years. So that's why I think whatever stock price you're today, I think the stock has never been as cheap as it is now.
Has the company already seen some effect from the war in Ukraine? In other words, have they been able to receive orders? Because I thought that the German government had kind of blocked something that Rheinmetall could provide in terms of heavy weapons.
This is correct. This is a sensitive part of the business and the sensitive part of communication, both for government and both for Rheinmetall. Yes and no. They start to receive more and more appetite from any government in the world. And I remember there was a fair of the defense industry in Paris by the end of H1. And I've seen I was able to see a lot of sales guy who has never been so active. And what the company was saying, our focus today is to harvest as much as possible because everything is different compared to before. So there is much more appetite everywhere in the world, and there will be probably much more order and opportunities. And this is a challenge of Rheinmetall to be able to crystallize it. Coming back to the position of Germany, and it's quite sensitive, I have no official answer because I can't say something different than the government. But basically, I think one of the constraints of Germany is the level of inventory or the level of ammunition inventory they have today, which doesn't allow them a lot of flexibility to send anything. Because as I said, when you have only 3.5 days of inventory, 3.5 days of war of inventory, it's difficult for you to send anything. So I don't know if by part the government can't really say officially to everybody about this situation that not all of us in the business, we understand. But you clearly don't want to go on the newspaper and say that you are too weak to give anything, which is probably the topic today, which is probably even those in Germany, like the Green Party, who used to be against in defense investment. Everybody now is following the same. It's we need to invest, we need to protect ourselves. And that's probably the limit why today they can't give as much as NATO would like. It's just simply because they don't have it. And I'm sure if they will have it, they will probably do some other country like the UK, like France or whatever, and the US, they will send more. So this is where there is growth. That's why I mentioned that the ammunition business is probably a margin mix driver for the business. I know that the company is moving from one shift in terms of production to two shift. So this is confirming that there is growth going forward.
Okay, great. That's very helpful. Well, Sebastian, I will leave it there. I would just encourage our members to feel free to reach out on either of the two ideas or your investment process more generally. Thank you so much again for taking the time to be with us again this year and share your insights with the MY Global community.
Thank you, John, and thanks to everybody.
Goodbye for now.